the explosion.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Right now, I got to tell you about the fabulous, most groovy Bell Bottom. Bell Bottom.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so glad that you're here to join us. Oh, Holly, look, even my dog Holly is here as well. We are The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, exclusively on MoreLikeRadio.com. My name is Mark Nixon. As always, I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Chris Whitten.
What's going on, man?
What's up, mate? So it is June 29th, 2017. And we are very, very happy that you're with us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, THEREELTHINGMLR. You can also follow us on Facebook. If you happen to be on Facebook, you can also drop us a line to join our movie group line, since we talk about shit literally all the time.
Yeah.
It would actually probably be better as opposed to waiting us for a show every 2 weeks. However, we go straight to the numbers, because I know that there were a couple things that happened last weekend and the weekend before that, since our last show.
Really big show.
Transformers was your number one movie last weekend. No, you don't like that?
No.
$44.6 million.
I like that.
For a cumulative total of 68. Actually, I take it back. $69 million for the three-day weekend.
I like when these movies start to fail.
Yeah?
I enjoy it. Isn't it enjoyable to you? Don't you think? Like when Pirates of the Caribbean comes down, nobody gives a fuck, and it makes, like, you know, $37 million or whatever it made. It's a disappointment.
But it does. No, wait. It does make the move. It does make the money. It makes the money elsewhere. Because the Chinese people and the French people and the, all those people.
Racist.
I'm not sorry. But no, it's going to make its money back.
Some of these movies make money back. Yeah, Transformers, I guess, will make its money back. God, I hope it doesn't, though.
I put it on, illegally, allegedly, on them internets.
Mm.
And,
how dare you?
I know, I'm a terrible, terrible person. And I remember watching the first one. Long, it seems like forever ago, with my girlfriend at the time, Angela, and I remember, I've told this on the show before, that I almost had to apologize, like, I'm really, really sorry that we went to this movie, because it was not good. It's not representative of me. Like, you know when, you know, like, when you're like, I'm all jazzed up to go see this movie, you're like, I really hope you don't think that I like shit like this, because yeah. I was trying to shoot.
Thought it would be fun.
Thought I would. No.
No.
No, it was written.
Well, that's funny, because most people, even people who hate the Transformers movies, will say, yeah, the first one was okay. And I disagree. Like, I'm with you. Like, the first one was, ugh, God.
Look, if I was 8 years old and I was, you must fight
sure.
me, like, oh, then I would of be course. All about it. But, you know, I'm a 25, 27-year-old man, like, you know, taking his, you know, equally old, in-age equivalent girlfriend to this, and she's just sitting there completely dumbfounded, like, where's your Ed Hardy t-shirt and all that type of shit.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, anyway, Transformers made that money. Mm. Wonder Woman still making money. It will be the highest grossing DC movie at this time, anyway, until Justice League comes out. It's going to best Batman vs. Superman. It's going to best Suicide Squad.
Well, it'll be the highest of these new DC Universe movies.
Yes.
It's not going to make more money than The Dark Knight.
Right? No.
Yeah.
But as far as this is concerned, also, Patty Jenkins, highest grossing live action movie directed by a female director. I know there's always little caveats in here and there. It's kind of an accomplishment.
It's absolutely an accomplishment, and I know with DC Universe, they're like, maybe it's DC Pooniverse. everything's going to be female from now on, you know, because they find out there's a market for it. You watch, in the next 5 years, there's going to be a whole bunch of female-driven action movies. Not just superhero movies, but action movies.
Yeah.
Just today, actually, Michelle Rodriguez sent out a tweet saying that, you know, she hopes in the future the makers of the Fast and Furious franchise put the, you know, females in the forefront of the scripts, and if not, it might be time for her to, you know, take a hike. Which I'm sure that's exactly what they'll tell her to do if they don't want to do that. But I kind of like her balls on her. Like, what balls on this fucking kid? I like the balls of Michelle Rodriguez going, you know what? It's all Jason Statham and The Rock and Vin Diesel. And you know what? You got Gal Gadot in your franchise now. And you got me. So you need to put us at the front. And I'll bet, man, maybe they will. Maybe they will.
I mean, you just can't argue with $338 million.
No.
Just domestic. It only dropped 40%. It made $24.9 million last weekend. You know, and Cars came out the week before. But honestly, like, it's a moneymaker. Like, it's been doing extremely well.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Cars 3, 47 meters down in the Mummy, round out your Type 5. So, Chris and I were able to take our significant others to the movie that we were jazzed and are going to review. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. We were able to see the new Edgar Wright movie, Baby Driver. And it seemed to me like there was a good turnout. I don't know if you were kind of noticing that, you know, it was kind of empty when we walked in the actual hall.
Well, we got there a little early. We were like 15, maybe even 20 minutes early.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fairly crowded. The early numbers showed that it had made a bunch of money on Tuesday night because it just had late night showings. And then on Wednesday it made money too. So it's looking to make like $20 million or something like that off a $40 million budget. So it's not a movie that's packing people into the theaters, but with the word of mouth, and if it gets a good weekend start here, it could make some cash.
Absolutely.
A little counter-programming.
And, Chris, please tell the people who is in the movie and just like a brief synopsis so we can, you know, kind of get into it and talk about it while it's still fresh in our mind.
Sure. So this is the new Edgar Wright movie. Edgar Wright made Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim, and The World's End. So he's made all the Cornetto trilogy.
Right.
And this is, he was going to make Ant-Man. He's the one who got that movie set, you know, wrote a script, hired Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas and everyone else that was in the movie, and then essentially parted ways with Marvel right before that movie got made.
Yeah.
So then he goes and makes this movie, Baby Driver, which is, you know, a heist movie, essentially.
Okay.
Bank robbers.
Yes.
The main character, Baby, is the driver for this crew of bank robbers. The cast of characters changes with every heist they do, but John Hamm, Jamie Foxx, Joe Barenthal, and Kevin Spacey are some of the big, some of the guys that are, I don't know the chick's name. Do you know what her name is?
Ah, gosh, I want to say it was Lily Rader, but let me look it up.
She's not, she's certainly not someone you've heard of like those other guys I just named, but she was very good in it. And Ansel Elgort is the lead actor in the movie, plays Baby. He's the driver. He's got tinnitus, so he plays music to drown out the humming in his ears when he's driving, but he's like a gifted getaway driver. And so what you end up with is a movie that's basically just a bunch of strung together action scenes which are choreographed to the music that he's hearing in his head.
Right, like an action musical.
It's an action musical. It's very much like a it's filmed in very much like an ultra stylized music video.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it's not just the action sequences. Even just almost every scene in the movie is somewhat choreographed to music, whether it's even minor little a finger tapping in the background or, you know, making breakfast or something. It's all choreographed to song.
You had asked, Elsa Gonzalez was Darling. Lily James was Baby's love interest, Deborah.
Yes. I don't know either of those two actresses from anything else, but they were both fantastic in the movie. Baby is in love with a waitress at a local diner that's played by Lily James. So that's the rundown of what the movie's about. The story is sort of secondary to Edgar Wright's style of filmmaking here on this movie. And in all, he's always been a visual director. He's the sole writing credit on this movie. So he wrote the script, and it's a good script, but it's serviceable. It really services the action in his visuals.
Now, all of his filmmaking up to this point, including this movie, are extremely kinetic and very, very well edited in our estimation, I'm guessing.
You know, I think in everybody. I mean, I can't imagine someone watching this and not coming away with the idea that Edgar Wright is a visual director.
Let me also preface this, listeners of The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, is that, you know, just to kind of back off on talking about Baby Driver for a second, because the last thing that I want to do as far as the show is concerned is just kind of like describe the movie and all that sort of thing. I kind of also want to put it in the context of this movie is set in Atlanta.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is cool.
It is cool. It's cool because how many times have you been to Atlanta?
Handful.
Yeah?
Yeah. Three or four.
I've been, God damn it, way too many times to count.
A bunch of times. We went to Atlanta together one time.
Yes, we did. We drove all the way there to go see the Pixies at the Fox Theater and then drove all the way back.
In one night.
The infamous Some Kind of Monster Metallica conversation where you can ride my lightning, Lars.
Right.
Yeah.
And we almost got ran off the road by a tractor trailer.
Holy shit, and you got into a car crash as soon as you got home.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
The next day, I got into a car crash. Weird.
That is weird. I have never been able to drive as well as Baby was able to drive in this movie.
It's a gridlock kind of town.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, you know the stories where, as recently as last year, where snow fell and people were stuck on I-85 for like 3 days.
Right.
And there were fires that literally just happened months ago where they had to shut complete sections of the entire Atlanta Intercross section down. I will say that from the very get-go, this movie is... This is how you open a movie. Even if you don't like the movie. I know that there was a person, Seth Lutter, on our Malign group that was talking about, well, I'm confused, I don't think it's that great. You know, there's a lot of hype behind it. It's supposed to be an action movie. It's supposed to be a drama. It's supposed to be a love story. I counter by saying, why can't it be all three?
Yeah.
Which it, you know, and again, I'm speaking for both of us, but you disagree with me if you want, Chris. But
no.
I feel like it did it very, very well for this movie. And I will also say that I'm a big, big fan of car chases.
Yeah.
And these are pretty good.
They're good, and I detected no CGI. And
right.
I gotta say, that does give it a feeling, like a tactile feeling to the action in this movie, just like what Tarantino did with Death Trap and Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
These movies might contain a little bit of CGI, but the vast majority of what you're seeing on the screen is done practically.
Yeah.
And I agree, I think it does it very well. It is going to be a little bit disconcerting, and I might have messed up with my wife. I told her going in, like, she's like, what else did this director make? I'm like, well, he made Shaun of the Dead, and he made Hot Fuzz, and he made, you know, The World's End and Scott Pilgrim. These movies are all funny as shit.
Yeah.
This is not a straight-up comedy like those movies are.
There's a couple of moments in there that are a little, you know, humorous and
lighthearted.
Yeah.
Like there is in any action movie. There's some laughs. Die Hard has laughs. Predator has laughs in it, you know.
Yeah.
But it is not a comedy,
no.
and that may be for some people that are expecting an Edgar Wright quote unquote movie, they might be a little bit thrown off by that. However, it is an Edgar Wright movie in the way that it's made. Every stitch of this movie feels like it was thought out. There's nothing that was sort of handed off to somebody else. Like everything about it is literally choreographed to music. Like every shot, every moment in the movie is unique and has to be the way it is.
It was really, really interesting. We were talking about this, and I was trying to shut up before we actually got on the mic and started recording and everything, because that's the worst thing that you can do as far as, you know, doing podcasts and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You like blurt out all the good ideas, and then you're kind of left stuck and I don't know what the hell to say. But this movie is relentless in the sense, in a good way, I'm saying that. You'll check it out on, like, iTunes or Spotify or Pandora or whatever, but there's, like, 32 tracks on the soundtrack. The soundtrack is so kick-ass. That's the thing that kind of impressed me. And I was telling you, Chris, that there's a couple songs on here that have samples of songs that I've heard from other spots before, but they're the original songs that are made. I'm like, oh, okay, now I totally get it. So I almost feel like these are songs that he didn't just arbitrarily pick out. These are songs that he's loved, and bands and, you know, albums and all that sort of thing. And
I think in quite a few cases, the song came before the scene did. Mm-hmm. It absolutely felt that way.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like something that's been sort of, he's been tooling around in his mind for 10, maybe 15, maybe more years. Like, yeah. This is the kind of stuff that anybody could think about when, you know, you got a buzz on and you got your headphones on and you're listening to a badass song. You can't help but, like, sort of imagine, like, you know, an action sequence attached to it or something like that. And that's what Edgar Wright's been doing with these songs.
Yeah.
And it completely works. It completely works. You might be expecting something else, like aforementioned Seth, but this movie works. It's got like a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think everyone that was in the theater, people were clapping in the theater that we saw. They were like whooping.
There are a couple of times where they were clapping when main protagonist Baby and Deborah, like, you know, they finally kiss for the first time because, you know, they're trying to, you know, make something happen, and, you know, unfortunately crime is getting in the way, right, and life is getting in the way and all that sort of thing. Man, I'll tell you something else though, and the girlfriend Tina is in the background and she can jump in whenever you want, but she was talking about how, you know, obviously you were mentioning about John Hamm, Jamie Foxx, yeah, John Bernthal, Kevin Spacey. My God, Jamie Foxx. Holy shit.
The movie's got a dark side to it, and Jamie Foxx, Joe Barenthal, Jamie Foxx, and a little later on, other actors really show this dark side, and it is dark. It's not a comedy.
There's like three consecutive scenes, like a good 25 minutes, where it's tense as shit.
Right.
Like, it's really, really good on Jamie Foxx, who's typically known for, you know, obviously he won the Oscar for Ray and all that sort of thing. You know, props to him. And he's got a comedy background because he did In Living Color and all that sort of
he's
thing.
He's not known as being a badass motherfucker, though. Like, that's not his gig, usually.
Well, right. Like, he's known as Motherfucker Jones on Horrible Bosses, but he's...
But it's kind of a joke. It's absolutely a joke in that movie.
He ain't no joke in this movie.
It's not a joke. He is legitimately scary. And then later on,
John Hamm?
John Hamm is legitimately scary. That was one of the things I liked about the movie. It felt dangerous with those two characters. And that's what he was trying to do. Like, he went out and got two really good actors so that you really felt the danger in these guys, like wild animals, these two characters, you know, I mean, and that's kind of, you know, one of the points that the movie is sort of making with this character, like, yeah, you don't want to get mixed up in this world, you don't belong in this world, this guy doesn't belong here, he's a sweet kid, and these guys are fucking mad dogs, like, Jamie Foxx, who I'm not, you know, I mean, I don't dislike him, I certainly recognize that he's talented, but you can't take your eyes off him in this movie when he is, when he's got his fucking cold ass stare, you know? I mean, he looks like someone that would slit your throat just for, you know, for threatening him.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, obviously the transition that happens later on with John Hamm, and there's a certain scene, well, a sequence of scenes, but primarily, you know, in the very end of the movie where there's a cut between Ansel Elgort and John Hamm, and just their eyes.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a good, like, grindhouse, like, B-movie feel. Like, it's really, really... But I actually exclaimed, holy shit, when there was a fucking scene that was going on.
Yeah.
Because it was pretty badass. Let me tell you something. Again, I'm talking about car chases. I know Chris has already hit on it with, like, no CGI and everything else. You gotta watch the shit just for the car chases. If for nothing else, I know there's, like, you know, YouTube clips that are gonna be coming on later on. But, man... I feel like I'm going to have to watch a second time.
Oh, no. This movie, it's so packed with every shot of this movie is so particular. Everything about it was so well thought out. You can't take all of it in one viewing. Like, there's so much there. I'll tell you what. Like, my immediate thought watching this movie is it's going to be the kind of stuff... It's going to be the kind of cult classic that people are going to be watching for a long, long time. I really do think that.
Yeah, and I know that...
I mean, it's a star-making turn for Ansel Elgort, I thought. Like, I thought he was...
I mean, I've never seen The Fault in Our Stars. But I know that
I've
it was...
I've never seen it either, so I've never seen this guy.
Yeah.
And I know people love that movie, and it's got a following. But I thought this was a star turn.
I would be remiss to say that I know that you're probably going to, I know that you're definitely going to disagree with my our ongoing debate about the movie Drive with Ryan Gosling.
I was thinking about that too.
However, I will say that if there were a driver that I would pick between Ryan Gosling or Ansel Elgort, like, it was kind of along, you know, they were kind of even, and then there was a lot more that I felt, you know, in Ansel Elgort's corner, like, as the movie went on and on and on. Not just because of the fact that they basically have the same amount of words that they say in this movie, but there was a little bit more effort on Ansel Elgort's part as opposed to Ryan Gosling. Not to take away from Drive. I know that you hate the movie.
Ansel Elgort was also not in a piece of shit, so...
See? I told you guys. On the real thing, I'm more like...
That helps.
Yeah.
The other big star of this movie, in my opinion, is Edgar Wright.
Yeah?
I'll tell you what. I think that this movie... I think it's interesting because he has... This is his fifth movie. So... fifth movie? Fourth. Fifth. Yeah, this is his fifth movie. He made the three movies with... Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, the Cornetto trilogy.
Yes,
so he made Shaun of the Dead, he made Hot Fuzz, and he made The World's End. All three of those movies co-written by those three guys.
Okay.
I think primarily Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, primarily. So he's got a writing a partner on those movies. And then he made Scott Pilgrim, which comes from another source material. So this is the first Edgar Wright movie that's purely his voice. He's the sole writing credit on the movie.
Yeah.
And I think it was done... I think it's a little bit of a fuck you to Marvel and to big studios, this movie.
Oh, well, look. I read an article about how he hasn't seen Ant-Man. He doesn't want to see... He doesn't want to see Ant-Man because he put it in the context. I'm paraphrasing, but he was almost saying, like, well, you know, it's like... Like, I don't want to see my ex-girlfriend, like, having sex with somebody else. Like,
sure.
I'm good. Like, what he basically told... what the hell is his name? Peyton Manning. No. Who the hell directed Ant-Man? Damn it, you're gonna make me look it up. Peyton Reed, okay. So he was telling Peyton Reed, look, just don't use my storyboards.
Yeah.
Everything else, you can use Michael Douglas, you can use Paul Rudd, my choices of actors and whatnot.
Director.
But
he doesn't give a fuck about anything but the visuals at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean it's I can relate to this movie in the sense that I think, as far as me personally, I am with my phone 24/7. Like, it may as well be just surgically attached to my arm. And it's the benefit of, in 2017, you've got all of your music in hand every single day, every single minute, every single hour. So you've got your own soundtrack just constantly going, whether you're in the shower and you're driving to work, you're actually at work, you're coming back, you're going, you know, somewhere else. And so, you know, you're like always tapping, you're like doing all that type of thing. Like that's kind of, you know, the thing that was kind of endearing to me was that Baby was doing the exact same thing.
This movie captures that.
But he's not, but I'm not Tokyo drifting like over, you know, around like, you know, cop cars and shit. That was fucking cool to me.
Yeah, that's what's fun about the movies. It's escapism. It's a little bit of what you do, but mixed with, you know, some fantastic car chases. Edgar Wright is basically doing an interview here. I mean, this is a resume, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he made a good movie. He obviously wanted to make this movie, and it was lovingly crafted and all of that, and it's fantastic, and everyone should see it. I do think also that it's a little bit of a fuck you to the studios. Like, not because this movie's going to make $1 billion, but it's a little bit of, I am a real director. Like,
yeah.
I can make a movie like this. And I think that's why he held the comedy back so much. Like, I think the movie feels like it should be funnier, actually. You're kind of waiting for jokes sometimes, almost.
Sure.
And I think that's intentional. I think he did that because he wants to show... I mean, this guy, you could get a Fast and Furious job making, you know, off this.
Like, oh, of course.
I don't think he'll do something like that. He may take a big budget, you know, studio movie in the future. I don't think he would do that series of movies, but he could. Based on this, they'll give it to him.
My one criticism of this movie is that it was an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It's kinetic. It's relentless. It's, you know, like, you know, to use the euphemism, the pedals to the metal, obviously, for this movie. I feel like the ending was a little tacked on.
Absolutely.
Because you need a happy ending.
Yep. I don't think you do.
It was a little rushed. Actually, I was kind of surprised. I was like, oh, okay, we're going to end it that way. But then it was kind of sped up within the next like 3 or 4 minutes afterwards. So aside from that, though, I would recommend it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm literally talking about like the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Yes.
I mean, everything's fine till then. They tack on an ending that I don't think harms the movie, but I don't think it helps it either. It doesn't need to be there.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I was thinking the same thing as I was watching it. Hey, you would have been better off to just end it 5 minutes before, figure something else out and just end it.
So, which movies have you seen this summer again?
Wow. We talked about this last show. I mean, like, right. When summer? Like, it was like, fuck, like, summer starts in February.
It started in May. Let's start in May. Start in May.
We'll do it live!
Fuck it. Fucking thing sucks. So, on The Real Thing, I'm more like radio.com.
So, May, I mean...
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 from then on.
Guardians of the Galaxy. I saw Alien. Wonder Woman. I saw Alien. I saw this. I mean, this blows everything else away.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, Wonder Woman is good for a... You know, it's good for a... superhero movie.
A viewing? Or is...
I would recommend that people... If you're into superhero movies, I would say you should go see Wonder Woman. Yeah. That's a good superhero movie.
Is Baby Driver rewatchable?
Oh, I think it will be infinitely rewatchable.
Okay.
I think in 10 years it's the kind of movie that'll be a cult classic. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to be The Big Lebowski. I don't think it's going to have a, you know, a festival about it every year.
No,
but it's going to be the kind of movie like Snatch or Super Troopers that maybe people didn't really watch when they came out, but now everyone you fucking know owns a copy of those two movies.
You know what? That's a really good comparison. Like, it's almost like Snatch.
Yeah.
The
movie got fucking panned when it came out.
It's got its own little moments. It's super, super quick. It's Guy Ritchie at his best. This is Edgar Wright at his best when it comes to his style of filmmaking and everything.
There's one guy that could have made this movie, and no one else, absolutely no one else could have made this movie. And moreover, no one who knows anything about directors and their styles, if that kind of thing is important to you, could watch Snatch or watch Baby Driver and not recognize that this is an Edgar Wright movie. It doesn't feel like anybody else. It doesn't feel like there's a director behind the camera that is sort of just phoning it in.
Gotcha.
At all. I mean, completely unique.
Yeah, this is extremely highly recommended. We highly recommend that you watch this movie. I'm probably going to watch this again. Absolutely. I know that Chris is probably going to watch this in Italian because he's going to be shipping across the Jolly Pond in several hours. And so we are going to wish Chris well and all that sort of thing. But we talk about Edgar Wright. We talk about how he is a talent as far as his directorial skills and whatnot, in the same way that I would argue that Chris Miller and Phil Lord would be, you know, probably compared and all that sort of thing. I know that...
King of the Segway.
We want to talk about this. Thank you very much on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. Because, look, we've got these people that have their own style. I mean, they're trying to do something different. They're trying to be eclectic. They're trying to, you know, not do the same thing that other, you know, people do and kind of, in my opinion, and probably in Chris's opinion,
Lord and Miller,
phone it in.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I mean, they've made... Okay, so they made the Lego movie.
Yes.
They made the 21 Jump Street movies.
Right, which again, let's remind everybody, like, we didn't think these movies were going to be worth a shit at all.
Joke.
Like, yeah, like, yeah. 21 Jump Street, really?
Yeah.
Okay, sure, whatever.
Here's what you get when you don't have, you know, a smart filmmaker making that. You get Baywatch. Like, 21 Jump Street should have been Baywatch. It should have been just another Dukes of Hazzard or a million other remakes that came and went,
yeah,
and nobody gave a fuck. But it wasn't. Like, it spawned a sequel, and people loved both movies.
Right.
And then they made The Last Man on Earth.
Yes, absolutely a good show. Yeah. And I will also say that Phil Lord and Chris Miller are also friends of Hippo Juice, which you can also listen
right.
to on morelikeradio.com, specifically Royce and Marie. So when we were talking about many, many, many months ago that, hey, listen, Phil Lord and Chris Miller are being pegged to direct a Star Wars movie. Not just any Star Wars movie. They're going to be directing the Han Solo movie, and we were all excited. We're talking about it. Oh my gosh, what a perfect choice. They've got Alden Ehrenreich as the main guy, as Han Solo. He's going to be, you know, acting with Donald Glover as...
Right. Lando.
Yeah, Lando Calrissian. And so...
The reason we were excited, too, is because it was such an inspired choice. It was outside the box. It was, you know, something different. This movie is not going to feel like Rogue One or any of the other Star Wars movies if it's a Lord and Miller movie.
So I propose to you, Chris. Chris, you're the biggest Star Wars fan that I know. Honestly, I don't.
I'm sure you know bigger Star. I mean, I love Star Wars, but I'm sure you gotta know somebody that's a bigger nerd.
Man, I don't know.
I do own like 4 shirts. So.
Yeah, you do. And your kids own 4 shirts, so yeah. Technically you own like 8 shirts.
I've got my son's outfit for the plane tomorrow all laid out.
Yeah,
it is a Star Wars outfit.
Any time that I say anything in error in regards to Star Wars, you're like quick to say like, well, actually.
Hold on a second, Mark.
I think that you're in error over here.
If you consult the Star Wars Almanac.
So, I gotta know your personal opinion, because now Phil Lord and Chris Miller are no longer directing the Han Solo movie. Ron Howard is in the director's chair.
It was like 48 hours where we didn't know who was going to be directing it, but pretty quickly they announced the replacement director, Ron Howard.
And there's just been story after story about how there was disagreements between Kathleen Kennedy and Lawrence Kasdan and the studio, and they weren't really doing anything, and Brian Castaneda is, you know, chiming in, our friend from our movie group Line, talking about how, and maybe, you know, studio propaganda that's being churned out and all that sort of thing. I mean, listen, it's a good assessment to talk about.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've heard anything in the week since this story broke about them, you know, arguing with Kathleen Kennedy or with Lawrence Kasdan, or the fact that they didn't like their freewheeling improvisational style.
Right.
I think this is all what myself and you and Brian and everyone sort of either said or just sort of figured was what happened. Like, you hired these two guys who are experienced and have brought in some movies that made some money, but they have a style which is not typical for a Star Wars movie. And it felt incongruous, if that's a word, or if I'm pronouncing it right. I might have been putting the wrong...
No, you're probably right.
...accent on the wrong syllable. But it felt sort of like inspired casting. Now, in hindsight, it felt like a bad decision on the part of Disney. Not a bad decision, because I don't think they would make a good movie. I think it would have been inspired. I think it would have been fantastic. We talked about it. We were both very, very, very excited about the idea of them doing it.
Right.
It would be bad because Disney and the Star Wars people, and it's not George Lucas anymore, but it's Kathleen Kennedy and it's Lawrence Kasdan, they just take it so goddamn seriously. These movies take themselves, and this whole Star Wars culture takes itself so seriously. Lawrence Kasdan wrote Empire Strikes Back. He wrote Return of the Jedi. This is the guy who made Han Solo cool. You know, Han Solo was...
He's the one that made Han Solo.
Well, no. Because Han Solo showed up in The New Hope, and that was written by George Lucas.
Hold on just a second there, Mark.
See what I said? See what I mean?
But Han Solo shows up in A New Hope. He's basically just a foil for Luke.
Yeah.
He's kind of a goofy character. He's cool, but he's goofy. He doesn't really do anything all that memorable. You like him, but it's not like he's not like he is in Empire.
Yeah.
He's not slicing open a tauntaun and, you know, shoving Luke's body in there, you know, so it'll keep you warm. You know, which is a heroic move, single-handedly saves him on Hoth. You recognize from the beginning of the movie that he's in love with Princess Leia, and his feelings are hurt because she wants him to stay because the way she feels about him, and she can't say it, and all this stuff that makes him human. Lawrence Kasdan created that, and now he went and wrote a movie about just that guy,
yeah,
the favorite character from the Star Wars universe of all fanboys, perhaps.
Right.
He wrote with his son a movie about that guy.
Yeah.
It was, you know, like, I'm sure a labor of love. I'm sure it was very near and dear to his heart. And then they go and get the guys that made, you know, the Lego movie. These guys that make, you know, good movies, but they got a lot of dick and fart jokes in them.
But wait a minute. Okay. Guy talking now on the show that has no real stake in Star Wars. Like, I will go watch Star Wars movies. Like, I've seen every single Star Wars movie now.
Yeah.
Like, I have to. Like, sure. I have to now. So, if that's the case, why even bother going through the fucking motions to hire the guys in the first place?
Totally agree, and I can't answer that. I think it was a dumb move. If you are that precious about your property that you do not want a different spin on it. Now,
it could be that
it was more than just a different spin. There could be stuff we don't know.
Okay, you've also talked about the preciousness of this. I will remind. No, that's wrong. Oh, shit. Oh, if you may, wrong trilogy, wrong IP. Okay, so, goddamn, my silence is such a fucking nerd.
You said precious. It can't. I know. That shall not pass.
Yes, it will not pass. Zing! Hell! Okay, so what I'm talking about, and girlfriend's laughing in the background, so I did a good thing. So, okay, the preciousness of Star Wars, now that it's in Disney's hands. This is now two consecutive movies. And look, it's going to make money.
Well, exactly. Look how terrible it worked out for Rogue One.
I know, but what I'm saying is that, like, Gareth Edwards, oh my gosh, there's reshoots, we need to bring Tony Gilroy in, blah, 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 we're firing Phil Lord and Chris Miller, we're bringing Ron Howard in. You know, listen, I know Ron Howard's a good director. He's good enough.
He's solid. He's a solid working man director.
Sure, solid like, you know, your oatmeal. Your oatmeal's going to give you something solid, reliable every single time.
Well, yeah. He, you know, you give him a good script, and he can make a very memorable movie, whether it's Splash or, you know, Rush or Parenthood. If you give him a mediocre script, like, you know, Ransom or something like that, then he's going to make a mediocre movie.
Oh, shit, man, I like Ransom, though.
Okay, but do you own it? I mean, do you,
no.
Do you go back and watch it?
No, man. Well, I mean, I've seen...
Me back, my son.
I've seen Gary Sinise a couple times.
He's made lots and lots of movies, but the guy does well with, you know, a good script. So then you got to ask yourself, is this a good script or not? I don't know.
It's still...
Brian Castaneda says that it's been, you know, Kasdan hasn't written anything in a long time. You know, The Big Chill was a long time ago, and Empire Strikes Back was a long time ago.
Yeah.
This, by the way, is the guy... Who every time there's a list of, you know, the, you know, my favorite 50 movies or whatever, the first thing he says on every one of those lists is, nothing from prior to 1958, and then, you know, but 1983 was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Brian, we love you. We love you so much.
I love you.
And we also need to get you on the show at some point. Like, you need to travel from New York to Florida. We need to make this happen, but... All I know is this, is that...
Favorite movies of Busby Berkeley movies. The Big Chill was a long time ago. Come on.
If you've got such investment in making sure that... Okay, look. Any press is good press. Honestly, we're talking about a movie that's not even going to come out for another year and a half.
Of course.
The fucking park is going to be opening in about that time as well, not 50, 60 miles from where we're sitting right now.
Yep.
It's also going to make money. I just think that, and I know that you've also obviously said it and kind of reiterated, but, you know, we just have no context because it's just, man, you know, I liked kind of the eccentric choice of how it could have been, but we're getting the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Force-fed, and people are going to eat it. Okay, do you have any other people that are, like, into Star Wars like you are? Like, have they said anything? Like, I can't believe that Phil Lord and Chris Miller are fired or, you know, any of that type of thing? Or they just don't care? They're like, eh, whatever, I'll still see Han Solo. Like,
no, regardless. I think that's how people feel. Like, you could get a fucking roast beef sandwich to direct this movie. Like, it would not matter. It's a Star Wars movie. There's going to be enough Disney and Star Wars brass on the studio that fucking shenanigans and bullshit isn't going to go down.
Shit.
You're not going to be turning this into something else. And that's what happens with these kind of properties. I mean, that's what happens. Like, you couldn't have, you know, Alfonso Cuarón made a Harry Potter movie, but, you know, I mean, if he tried to throw some bullshit in there that wasn't inside that universe, they would have been like, no, get the fuck out of here. Like, you know, there's smart directors that know how to weave in their style a little bit into these big franchises, but for the most part, these big franchises, they don't want guys like that. They, you know, the Broccolis who make the 007 movies, they don't want Steven Spielberg, you know? They don't want these guys to make their movie because they want their movie to be about Bond, not about Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, they can't afford Steven Spielberg, so they get Steven Spielbergo, his Mexican counterpart.
Steven Spielberg. Yeah. Esteban Spielberg.
Esteban Spielbergo.
Yeah, but no, I mean, there was a time when he wanted to make it, and he was, you know, he's not the Steven Spielberg. He was famous, but he wasn't Steven Spielberg that we know today.
Right.
And they weren't interested, you know?
Yeah, shit. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of jaded with it. It's sad, and I will let you.
Well, I'm disappointed.
I will let you know this is that I know that Royston Marie via Hippo Juice on MoreLikeRadio.com, they are going and have reached out to Phil Lord to have him on their show, because they're close friends when they used to live in Miami, to talk about this. Hopefully we can get some sort of insight. If for nothing else, just to kind of get their side of the story, because I know that everything that you read, fake news, you know what?
News.
Yeah, of course.
No, I would love to hear, you know, they've been very gracious about it so far. And them going, I'm sure they have some kind of non-disclosure, but
sure.
Hopefully at some point they'll be able to do an interview, still be gracious, but shed a little bit more light, you know, from an intellectual point of view, what the situation was, like what led to this. Because that kind of stuff fascinating when this sort of thing happens. I think it's fascinating when Edgar Wright leaves Ant-Man. I think it's fascinating that, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller left Han Solo. This movie, by the way, this isn't Ant-Man. This movie was shooting.
Yeah.
This movie's almost done shooting.
Yeah.
So this is very unusual. The Exorcist thing happens, you know? They make a movie. It's so fucked up that they hire another movie to, you know, shoot 80% of the movie over, release that movie, and then a fucking year later, they release the original movie. Like, stuff like that happens, and it's so fascinating and weird. I do hope that we get a little bit of a story from this. Hopefully it'll be on Hippo Juice. That would be pretty badass.
That would be badass. And so I would encourage you, we would encourage you, Chris and I, to listen to Hippo Juice. It is on morelikeradio.com. You can also stream it via YouTube, via iTunes, etc., etc. It is on 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, excuse me, on Wednesday nights. And so... but as always, we are the real thing on morelikeradio.com. Chris, I know that you have limited time due to your children's and whatnot, but I know that you've been able to see a couple of shows in their completion. You can go ahead and talk about them in general terms, because I've got a show that you have not watched that we were trying to recommend to you. And so I know that you finished up Veep and House of Cards.
I finished up Veep, I finished up House of Cards. I still need to watch Silicon Valley. I might do that tonight. So.
Okay.
Those two shows kind of go together for me because both had a somewhat disappointing season.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah. Both had a disappointing season. Both ended on, you know, a big final episode that sort of teases you what is to come. And in both cases, I kind of felt like...
They're kind of mailing it in?
Let's go ahead and pack it in. I'm not really, like, I get your teaser for the new season here, and I'm going to go ahead and say nothing lasts forever. You both had a pretty good run.
Right.
Veep had a better run than
House of Cards.
And, right, I think it's like one more season on it or something like that.
I think probably like five or six.
Five or six.
Yeah.
House of Cards, this was five? Or
five.
This was six.
This is number five.
Okay. So, yeah, both of them, disappointing final episode. Well, Veep we can talk about.
Yeah, Veep I've been watching, you know, pretty consecutively, along with Silicon Valley, and I would encourage you to watch Silicon Valley, for nothing else, because T.J. Miller, who plays Ehrlich Bachman, is no longer going to be on the show for the final season, next go-around.
Which I'm okay with. I like T.J. Miller, I like his character, but I also, I think it's interesting when, and by the way, I think that Silicon Valley has been a disappointment this season so far, too.
Let me comment on that. I feel like this is that they're both like snacks. Like snacks that you know what you're gonna get. It tastes good, but there's nothing fulfilling afterwards. It's just kind of the same thing over and over again, which is fine to a certain degree, but I also know that at the very beginning of each of those shows that it was, you know, kind of like pushing forward, either with the plot, either with the characters,
right.
You know, you kind of got a thing. If you want, you know, comedy of, you know, people just insulting the shit out of one another and, like, you know, awesome cutdowns, you watch Veep. If you're talking about Silicon Valley, you know, it's kind of in a different manner, in a different context, but it's basically the same thing. They're enjoyable, but, you know, you can go, they're not memorable.
I would throw Curb Your Enthusiasm into that same mix. It's the same with all these comedies. Like, they're fantastic. The first couple seasons were the best. And after that, I just don't think you can sustain. Comedy doesn't have, it's more about the characters. It's more about the dialogue. And it's less about the story. And if you don't have a story that's moving forward significantly, then the rest of the show just kind of doesn't hold together. It's like, okay, we've seen this before. what's going on here. Yeah. The story in Silicon Valley we've kind of seen before. They're just always sort of moving from one project to a new VC guys, to a new company. You know, yeah, it's just kind of the sort of the same thing over there. Also with Veep, it's like, okay, we're running for president. Okay, we are the president. Okay, we're not the president, but we want to be the president again. And it's just we're sort of having the same meeting over and over again.
Yeah,
Mike McClintock, no way. He's out for good.
Yeah.
He comes back.
Yeah, of course.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, same kind of pattern, you know, with these comedy shows. Same pattern. Just gets repeated and repeated. Doesn't mean it's bad. Later episodes, later seasons of Curb are great. I say great. I mean, they're fine. There are laughs in there. Same with Veep and Silicon Valley this season. There were laughs.
No, they're
not as good as it was.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. What I will and I'm
in House of Cards. Big laughs.
big laughs in the House and the Senate, ladies and gentlemen. But saying all that to say this is that Tina, the girlfriend, and I were able to watch a recent show that's been released on Netflix, GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and it stars Allison Brie. Mark Maron.
You had me at Allison Brie.
Ooh, she's hot.
Yeah.
But
I don't even like Mark Maron. I'm going to come out of the I don't like Mark Maron closet here.
Okay, now why is that?
I don't know. I'm not nuts about him.
Okay.
I don't dislike him, but I don't care for his podcast. Like, for some reason, I just don't like.
Never heard his podcast.
Yeah, I don't. I just don't. His comedy is
never
not
heard
my
his
thing.
Never heard his comedy either.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know.
No.
You
I'm just,
had me at Allison Brie.
I'm giving you context. Betty Gilpin. I don't know if you've ever seen her. She's been in Masters of Sex. She was in American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in Nurse Jackie and Fringe and let's see. What's the other one? What is the other one that she's in? Law and Order, Special Victims Unit.
Who the fuck wasn't in Law and Order?
Okay.
Everybody's been in Law and Order.
But let me tell you something. This is shout out to our mutual friend Patrick Barnett, because I know that he is probably the like in the same context that I was talking about you being the biggest Star Wars fan that I know, and you probably don't think that you are, but you are. Patrick is the biggest wrestling fan that I personally know, because he is all about wrestling, whether it's men wrestling, ladies wrestling, Mexicans wrestling, Asians wrestling, et cetera, et cetera. And
he's not ironically into it.
He's in it.
Yeah.
He's got mask.
He's like,
he's got his own goddamn persona. He is El Fantastico, El Hombre de Muchas Caras. Like, he is
Does he wrestle?
He's doing his own wrestling burlesque show in September that I'm going to be part of, because I'm supposed to grow a mustache out and be the mouth of the South Jimmy Hart with my megaphone in hand and knocking people out.
Wow.
That's besides the point, though.
I see you more as Jimmy the Snooker Superfly.
I wish I could jump off the top rope like that. But look, this Netflix show, which is an ensemble cast about a gang of misfit women that have been forgotten, that are on the fringe, that are trying out to be an actress.
It's based on a true story, though, right? Like, sort of loosely? Like,
yeah, kind of a...
based on the world of Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, which was real, but these characters are made up.
Yeah, fictionalized truths or whatnot, but it is... How the Gorgeous Ladies
fake
of Wrestling...
News.
Fake news. Huge. The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling program, league, show, if you will, came to be in the 1980s. And if you're a fan of the 80s, and I didn't think that I was, but when I started to watch like all the stuff that was in the show, like the huge... Huge, like cell phones that are the size of your forearm, all the feathered hair, all the soundtrack, you know, the music that's being used, all the like crazy, stupid outfits. Like, there were some terrible, terrible outfits.
Oh, yeah, we got some of this in Stranger Things, too. Like,
yes.
Netflix and the shows with the 80s love.
Yeah, I'm almost, and when I was watching the show, and I was almost kind of wondering, I was like, okay, so we've got 80s nostalgia with GLOW and Stranger Things, and we're, you know, getting into the 90s as well with, you know, whatever's going on. How the hell are we going to represent the aughts or the 2010s? I have no idea. It's not a criticism. I'm just kind of wondering, like, what is going to be, like, the defining thing that is going to be represented in 2035 or 2046?
God, I have no idea. I feel like we have very little cohesive culture right now.
Yeah.
Music did tie a lot of that together, and music's just all over the place right now.
Yeah, but I will say a couple things about the show. So I've watched Orange Is the New Black. You've seen Orange Is the New Black?
I've seen an episode or two.
So it's got a couple of writers and producers from that show that's working on the show. And truth be told, I was honestly a little reticent to watch the show until I realized and I saw that each of the episodes, and there's 10 episodes for the full season, are 30 minutes long. It's perfect.
Yep.
Okay, look, I've got finite time, and there's only so much, you know, crying and drama and, you know, action and comedy and all that sort of thing that I can invest. Whoever is doing the writing for the show is doing an absolutely fantastic job of condensing all of that so that there isn't any sort of, like, lull or anything else. Like, granted, yeah, there's exposition, there's conflict, yeah, and we've got a couple of twists here and there, but it's the progression from, you know, these ladies that are respectfully empowered, that it's not just, you know, tits and ass and all that sort of thing. Like, you know, some of the ladies that are on there are hot. We go back to Alison Brie, we go back to Betty Gilpin and, you know, all that sort of thing, but it's done in a way that is respectful not only of what they're trying to do on screen, but also of, you know, kind of the struggle for, you know, like legitimacy, like, shit, we can do this too. Like, it's not something that we've, you know, thought that we could do, but it's, you know, like almost empowering,
right,
that sort of thing.
So would you describe this show as like a drama or a comedy, or
it's a little bit of both?
Yeah,
it's a little bit of both. And, you know, it goes to the acting of Alison Brie, Betty Gilpin, Mark Maron, by the way, and again, I go back to the fact that I've never listened to his podcast, never listened to his, you know, comedy albums or any of that sort of thing. It's just this smarmy, sexist, like, asshole.
Sounds about right.
Asshole, yeah. Guy. Like, so I know of Mark Maron. I know that if you were probably watching the show, you would probably say, oh, great, he's basically playing himself.
Yeah.
And he probably is, and that's fine. But it also kind of works because it shows him to be, you know, somebody that's a little sympathetic, and then he just, like, goes and does something fucking completely stupid and all that sort of thing. But he's also trying to, like, make this whole thing work. I think you would like it.
Yeah.
I think you would need to check it out.
Because Netflix got a really good track record.
They've got a couple things right now that I'm a little interested in that.
They also smartly just sort of bail on the stuff that doesn't work.
Well, right. Like
they have to.
Like the, what was it, the Get Down? Wasn't that the one that they
Get
like
Get Down? Had? Yeah. Actually, if you just look at, you know, I mean, it's like Google sometime, like Netflix original series, like there's way more than you think. Like there's been a bunch.
Yeah.
And they just come and go if they don't work, and they just move on to the next thing, or pump more money into Orange Is the New Black, or Stranger Things, or Glow, and it's very, very smartly just move on to the next thing if it doesn't work.
The other thing I was going to mention, too, about Glow is that, you know, I was trying to look at, you know, different people that were involved in it. Jesse Peretz, who directed the pilot for Glow, has also directed the following music videos. It's A Shame About Ray by the Lemonheads.
I knew that name.
Big Me, Learn to Fly, The One, and Low, Foo Fighters.
Damn.
Yeah, and The Seed 2.0 by The Roots. So, and good on him.
I knew that name.
It was kind of interesting to me. So, but I would definitely recommend Glow. If for nothing else, like it's a cool show.
Watch an episode or two in Italy. What could be more Italian than watching the gorgeous ladies of wrestling about the American women's wrestling movement in the 1980s?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I would definitely...
I'm looking forward to that, though. I love the 80s nostalgia. I love watching an old movie where Michael Douglas is driving around in a Chrysler LeBaron with a big old brick phone up to his ear, you know?
Well, you know, when were you born? What year? 1983?
80.
1980.
I was born in 80.
Okay, so apparently we've got some sort of designation now. We are called Xennials. Between 1977 to 1983 or 84, we had an analog childhood and a digital adulthood.
Yeah.
So we can, you know, like go back and say, like, yeah, we were, you know, popping in VHS tapes and, you know, watching Betamax and shit. And now I've got every single thing that I could ever want on my fucking phone.
I remember waiting in the line outside the little photo developer hut outside Publix, you know. Out in the parking lot, you would go to a little hut and get your... By the way, I took my kids to the bank the other day. They asked me what it was.
Holy shit.
What is this place?
What is the bank? Yeah. You don't need to be here, Daddy.
Yeah. And I mean, you just don't see that. Like, I feel like as a kid, I was in the bank with my mom or my dad, like, once, twice a week. Like, you just had to do it. Like, and now everything's digital, everything's drive up, everything's on your phone, and yeah. We just don't have to go in there anymore. They also asked me who Bugs Bunny was the other day. They couldn't give me his name. I put on a YouTube an old Tex Avery Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Those are the best ones.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they were enjoying it, but they could not tell me what this rabbit's name was.
Oh, shit. Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck to say either. It's a digital world, you know?
I know, right?
It ain't on Netflix, and it's not in front of their face. I don't know what it is.
As we wrap up on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, we highly encourage you to follow us. Follow us, goddammit, on Facebook, on Twitter. MoreLikeRadio.com has a bunch of awesome shows. Hippo Juice is definitely one that you need to be listening to as well. For our final segment, and I use the term finally very, very pointedly, I propose to you, Chris, the following.
What about a lethal weapon?
No.
You seen Die Hard, dude?
No.
Bad Boys 2?
No.
You ain't seen Bad Boys 2?
Finally, Chris! Finally! Because of that movie that was also directed by Edgar Wright, and my personal Edgar Wright favorite, Hot Fuzz, I finally got to see Bad Boys 2.
Have you seen Bad Boys 1?
I have not.
No.
I have never.
Doesn't matter. I'm just curious.
I know who's in it. Tia Leone. Remember when Tia Leone was a thing?
It's Taya.
Taya Leone, 6 days, 7 nights with Harrison Ford.
Ugh. Jurassic Park 3.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember when Taya Leone was a thing. I saw Bad Boys 1 once in the theater when it came out in 94 or whatever it was.
Did you see Bad Boys 2?
I saw Bad Boys 2 once in the theater when it came out.
Really?
I've never seen it again. So I remember watching Hot Fuzz thinking like, oh, that movie's really got a following, huh? Like, and then ever since then, people talk about it and stuff like that. Probably a lot because of Hot Fuzz and because of the joke in the movie.
Well, no, like, our friends in line, like Adam Forla, Damon DeVore.
They all love Bad Boys 2.
They all love Bad Boys 2. They were very, very confused. Like, how the hell have you not seen Bad Boys 2? They're not even quoting Hot Fuzz anymore. And I think I know what the reason was that I think it was because this movie came out right around the time after Armageddon and Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Also directed by Michael Bay. And both of those movies, I thought, were just complete shit.
Oh, this is a better movie than those. Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, because I've got, you know, several notes scrawled on my notepad and all that type of thing. But I think I was just, I don't know what the hell I was expecting. I mean, honestly, it was fucking Michael Bay. Like, what the hell do you want me to do? Like, it's, you know, drillers that don't want to pay taxes anymore in Pearl Harbor, and it's... what the hell is her name? Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck, Batfleck, saving the fucking world from, you know, the Japanese scourge and shit.
This is the kind of stuff that Michael Bay does well, though. Like, this movie, the one with Mark Wahlberg a couple years ago, where he was a bodybuilder.
Pain and Gain.
Pain and Gain with The Rock. The original Bad Boys. Even The Island. Like, he does this kind of stuff fairly well. It's when you get into the schmaltzy stuff like Armageddon and Pearl Harbor, or you get into the, you know, CGI world destruction shit like Transformers, that's where he loses me. But when you get him, you know, a decent action script, like, these movies are watchable.
Yeah, Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, obviously. Will Smith probably at, like, biggest movie star at the time in 2003.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
When the first one came out, it was like, yeah, okay, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence are both a couple of...
What the hell is a Fresh Prince with a gun in his hand? That's kind of weird.
But it was like, I mean, Martin Lawrence was almost a bigger star than Will Smith was at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, or as big. And now, and then when they made Bad Boys 2, it was like, they're worlds apart. Like, Martin Lawrence wasn't even on TV anymore. I'm not sure if he was even making movies, really.
I mean, he was doing Big Mama's House.
He was doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But he certainly wasn't, like, hitting it out of the park. And so this was a big... when he got that phone call, he was like, oh, yes, you know? Those kind of movies weren't coming across his plate at that time.
There's a bunch of people in, like, just listen to this. Your favorite actor in mine, Michael Shannon, as a KKK redneck, Okay, there's one. Dr. Dre did the music for this movie as well. I don't know if you know that in the credits and everything. No. It almost sounds like when I was watching the movie, I was like, okay, so these are all the beats that didn't make the Chronic, 2000
yeah.
and shit.
Yeah.
So he did that. P Diddy, Puff Daddy, musical consultant for the movie. Henry Rollins as a SWAT guy. Peter Stormare as a creepy drug baron. I think he was Russian. He's definitely Russian.
No.
Ron Shelton.
He always plays a Russian.
Ron Shelton, who wrote the screenplay, or co-wrote the screenplay, did Bull Durham, he did White Man Can't Jump.
That's right.
And there was a couple other people in here that were of a note as well, where Michael Bay actually shows up in the fucking movie.
Does he really?
Yes, he does.
I didn't know that.
He's the one where Will Smith and Martin Lawrence were trying to chase after somebody. And I'll get into the pros and cons of this movie as far as my estimation is concerned. But they steal a Cadillac that's being test-driven by Michael Bay, and Michael Bay calls Martin Lawrence a freak. Something of that effect. John Sally, who used to play with the Miami Heat, and yep. Dan Marino, they're also in the movie, too. I'm going to tell you something right now. I had no expectations like you had when it came to, like, okay, well, apparently everybody's making a big deal about Bad Boys 2. It's mentioned with great love and affection in Hot Fuzz. Let me check it out, because we're watching Baby Driver this week and all that type of thing. God damn it, this movie was fucking kick-ass. For, like, the first half hour, 45 minutes, and every single shot that I saw where Will Smith is jumping, shooting two guns while jumping through the air, like, and it's fucking explosions and fucking crazy, like, cartoonish shit.
Absurd.
It is, but it's good absurd.
Oh, it is. It's well aware of how absurd it is.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with blowing up Klansmen. That's just me. But towards the, as the movie went on, I think I know what the problem that I have when it comes to, like, these action movies and where, like, I don't give a damn. Like, I need some sort of comedic element. I can't do brooding all the time. Like, no. Even with, Christian Bale Batmans and everything, it gets a little grating, it gets a little worked on. And this movie, for all the ridiculousness that it had, I feel like, man, it's 2.5 hours. And it's every minute of 2.5 hours. Like, it is a fucking chore. Because, for whatever reason, again, we go back to the Transformers the last night, the other Transformers movies and everything. I feel like Michael Bay has just got OCD. He's got, like, a zillion ideas in his mind, and he's trying to put them all on film, and he just can't, like, you've got an awesome fucking car chase on the Miami fucking highway, and there's shit fucking falling everywhere. I'm like, God damn it, this is fucking amazing. And then you completely, like, slow the fuck down with, some jokes about rats and shit over here and there.
Yeah. I mean, he's an egomaniac. No, seriously. I mean, you can see it watching his movies, and, yeah. And what you're talking about is the same thing that, people like Tarantino and I think, to a lesser degree, Scorsese suffer with, which is, like, they can't get rid of their own ideas. Like, they can't self-edit as well as they probably should be able to. Right. You would do better to cut 20 minutes out of all your movies.
Yeah, I even wrote on here, weird, awesome montage, crash/gun porn, no CGI ? Because the part where all the fucking cars are, like, falling off, I'm like, God damn it, this is fucking crazy, it doesn't look like there's any CGI, like, there may be a little here and there, but I honestly thought that Michael Bay was just dropping fucking cars in front of, whatever, the speeding car, the Maserati that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence is driving in, which, by the way, I will say this, is that I checked, do you know where Martin Lawrence was born? He was born in West Germany, before Germany finally became whole, tear down this wall, whatever.
Really?
Wrong wall. But he also grew up in New York. He's wearing a Michael Vick jersey. It hasn't aged well. I'm sorry.
No.
But the girlfriend Tina was, kind of watching it, and she was like, yeah, this is kind of like the original Fast and Furious.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you think about it.
Yep.
But
it was actually after the original Fast and Furious by a couple years. Yeah. Wait, what year was Bad Boys 2 made?
Bad Boys 2 was in 2000 and I want to say it was 3?
Yeah. Fast and Furious came
2003.
Out. 2003. Fast and Furious came out like 2001, something like that. So yeah. This is a couple years later.
So I was, writing myself and I'm, thinking, I was like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. Okay, they're chasing these people, and they've got Jordi Mola, who's also the bad guy in Blow, and they've got Joe Pantoliano, you know, from The Matrix, and
Joey
Joey Pants, like from Sopranos as well, and he's just coming in as like the fucking annoyed police chief, like I can't believe that you crashed 20 cars. The city, the mayor, the city commission is gonna be up on my ass, and he just walks away.
He was in the first one too. It was at the time I remember thinking like I'm glad they brought Joey Pants back. Like they didn't have to. They could have had some different captain at that time or whatever. But I like Joey Pants.
Yeah, and for all the complaining that
whatever happened to him, you never see Joey Pants anymore.
Joey Pants. I don't know. Let me look up Joey Pants.
How great he was in Memento, seeing him get a real good role. Yeah, I know, it was exciting at the time. Like Matrix was right around that time, and then he just sort of disappeared. One of my favorite movies from the 80s, Running Scared, with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. My Coke! My Coke!
A legitimate reason to see the 1996 movie Bound. For other reasons as well, with Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon. I'm not going to go into that. Yeah, but I will say this: for all the complaining that I'm doing about the movie, oh my gosh, the story goes on too long. There's a zillion ideas, blah blah blah. There's a couple of scenes in there that were really really fucking funny.
Oh, it's a funny movie.
Where every time, okay, I got to look it up because I'm not going to be able to say it because
I mean these guys both started in comedy.
Yes.
And when Bad Boys came out, like, that was kind of, I think, what people thought, too. Like, oh, those guys are comedians. Okay. I mean, it's like a Beverly Hills Cop type thing.
Right. Every time they're talking about their feelings, like, they're pouring their hearts out, and they're being video recorded in a store with all these, like, TVs and everything. This song comes on.
Some good-ass weed. Check it out, dog. This game is a motherfucking trip, man. Word on the streets. Everybody always try to run up on me, hollering my word on the streets. This nigga said this, man. I don't give a fuck about what that nigga says, man. That's what's wrong with you niggas. You niggas are just like bitches. Whole ass niggas talk too motherfucking much. Stay to your own, get your own. You know what I'm saying? Be independent, nigga. Bitch. Bitch, nigga. Bitch, nigga. Bitch, nigga.
I only remember it because I listened to, you know, Chronic 2001 probably more than I care to admit. So, the other scene that is so fucking funny, completely not even necessary, was when Martin Lawrence's daughter is going on a date with this kid named Reggie, and him and Will Smith, who's acting like some ex-con that just got out of prison. Reggie, like, motherfucker, like, how old are you? 15, sir, like... Shit, you look like you're 30, and they just go on and on, like, rapping and everything.
That got a huge, wild laughter. I remember that. That's the part of Bad Boys 2 that I remember more than all the sideways jumping with two guns and stuff. Yeah. Is the bit with,
the
suitor for Martin Lawrence's daughter. Yeah.
It's so goddamn funny. But
huge laugh.
But again, I go back to the action, all that sort of thing. In the third act, I'm like, oh shit, they're going to Cuba. Oh my god, they're blowing up a mansion. Oh my god, everything is blowing up. The ending notwithstanding. And also it's got Gabriel Union with... Chris, you and I were literally at New York and Company with your wife Keisha buying a dress, and I'm looking at a sign, and Gabriel Union is there. It's predestined. It's meant to be. Gabriel Union, you're selling your wife dresses, and you're also standing in a minefield right outside Guantanamo Bay after you've rode down a Hummer with Jordi Mola. Oh, yes, you did.
Yeah,
until I just reminded you.
That's the part with the slow motion helicopter flying overhead, the sideways upward camera shot. Like, yeah.
It's so excessive. It's not even funny. It's so trashy. It's gloriously trashy.
It is gloriously trashy. Yeah. That's exactly how it feels. You know, what can you say? Like, I think that Michael Bay works when he has just kind of a straightforward action movie. Like,
sure.
I don't think he need, like, he gets lost in the CGI with the Transformers and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It just feels like nothing. And the schmaltziness is actually even worse. Like, I would probably rather sit through Transformers than Pearl Harbor or Armageddon.
Again. Oh my god, absolutely, yeah.
Like, one of the Transformers I didn't see. Like, the third one or the fourth one or the
fifth one. Dark of the Moon, Revenge of the Fallen, blah,
like,
blah, blah.
I'll sit through one of those again, or, you know, for the first time before I would sit through Armageddon again.
Yeah.
Even if it outlasted it by, like, an hour, I would still choose Transformers.
I am...
It's just unwatchable.
I am glad, though, that I'm glad that this movie exists, if for nothing else, that you can take from it and kind of make it your own, like Edgar Wright has been able to do in Hot Fuzz or any of his other, you know, action sequences and movies and that type of thing. Because I know that there's a lot of... Michael Bay just did not... Like, he's on record, like, I don't give a fuck. I like my film style. If you don't like my film style, then I'm not going to change it because that's what pussies do, or something to that effect.
Good
I don't
for
know.
Him.
Yeah.
He's supposed to make Bad Boys 3, by the way.
Is he really?
That's what they've been trying to get it off the ground for a little while here.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it now.
Hey, I'll probably watch it too. You know.
Oh, shit! I completely forgot. Here's the other thing. As we wrap up on the real thing, the one thing, here's the second complaint, and this is what you came up with, not me. You came up with this. We're watching the fucking trailers before the goddamn movie.
Oh,
the D-Box trailer comes on with a car driving around a track.
Insult to injury.
And you fucking hit a plus button and it's like fucking turbochargers and it's got a fucking plane rocket propulsion thing going on. Baby Driver should have a fucking D-Box.
Baby Driver apparently not selling enough tickets. Like, they don't have the D-Box seats in every seat, so it's in, like, their bigger theaters, and Baby Driver's not in a big theater, so you can't do D-Box. But what a fucking movie. You know, you can basically only get use of the D-Box seats if you want to go see a superhero movie, or you want to go see a Transformer movie. Now, I saw Deadpool in D-Box, so that was pretty cool.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But, again, it's a superhero movie. It happened to be a good one, but it's another superhero movie. Baby Driver was made for D-Box. I'm sure that somewhere has it in D-Box local. I need to research that. I'm going to Italy tomorrow.
You are going to Italy tomorrow. I will find it for you somehow, some way, and I will report back. We are going to be
If you go see the movie again, you should do that. You should see if you can find it in D-Box.
I'm going to try. Yeah. God damn it, I'm going to try. Especially if you're going to be out. We're going to be taking a hiatus, obviously, while Chris is away and everything. And so we wish Chris Godspeed on his travels to Italy.
Italia.
16 days. Italia. Mangia. Mangia bello. And so, good thing that we're ending with talking about Baby Driver, because we will leave you with Bex Deborah. The song from the 1999 classic album Midnight Vultures, probably his best album in our opinion.
Pretty
damn close. Next to Odelay and, you know, whatnot. So, Chris, always a pleasure.
Likewise.
My name is Mark Nixon. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. Get sexy with Beck. Get sexy with Deborah. And her other sister. I can't remember what her name is. But we're all about Deborah.
Jenny,
that's right, Jenny. So, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Take it easy, y'all. Take it easy.
I could step to you with a fresh pack of gum, and somehow I knew you were looking for some unknown, like a fruit that's ripe for the picking. I wouldn't do you like that, same could chicken. Get with you, and you know what we're gonna do. I wanna get with you. Got something that I just got to get with. late at night after work. I said, lady, step inside my Hyundai. I'm gonna take you up to Glendale. Heat. Ain't no use in wasting no time getting to know each other. You know the deal, cause only you got a thing that I just got to get with. Got to get with. For you, girl. Yeah. Cause I'm a full grown man, and I'm not afraid to